Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg and Kirk Gray's on the line. Hey, Kirk.
Hey, Fred. Good to hear your voice again.
Yeah, same. And realizing we're recording this a little bit in advance, this should come out sometime a week or two after the Rams conference. So it was great seeing you there. We'll do a little time shift here. And yes. Hopefully I had a great conversation and a good time and met a lot of our listeners. That would be wonderful. If you didn't get a chance to talk to us at the conference, feel free to get in touch with us. You can at ascendoreliability.com or at reliability.fm. We'll take you to the same places. You can find our contact info and ways to get in touch with us. So we'd love to hear from you. And if we saw you at RAMS, we will probably be back in touch anyway. So we look forward to talking to you. So anyway, I wanted to mention that, Kirk, because we often plug, the last time we recorded, we were plugging a bunch of the RAM stuff. Well, we're going to be after that now, so I wanted to head that off at the pass.
We won't put that on the show notes.
That's right. And from what I understand in our brief discussion as we're getting set up here is that it sounds like you have a new electronic device in the home, and it's a continuation of a story about your old was it the DLP, the mirror-based television set? And you had like one pixel that was white, and you had a number that were black. And did it fail? Is that why you're moving on to a new box?
Well, a couple reasons, Fred. And one, it's kind of a balance between technological obsolescence and the fact and price. Of course, price in electronics continually drops, but it is a reliability issue with the television, and it looks like. With the Mitsubishi DLP, I did find out that I purchased that in 2000, and I think it was 2009. It looks like the manufacturing date on there.
So 7 years. Seven, eight years.
Right. And actually, I was expecting, and I don't believe I replaced the lamp in there, which is a mercury vapor, and it's built to be replaced, where it's kind of a module. And I was expecting that would be the failure most likely, because that's what the engineers really counted on or had calculated and made it modular, made the mercury vapor lamp assembly modular so you could replace it and continue using the television after the lamp had worn out and been replaced. But what I'm seeing in this, and we've talked about this in a past podcast, was the DLP chip is, of course, a MEMS, a microelectronic
machine,
right? It's a very small array of tiny, tiny little mirrors that flip according to the color that's coming through a color projection wheel. And, billions and billions of 10 to the 15th or something that I've calculated operations, eventually one of them or two of them got stuck. I see one is a bright white, which is noticeable, but there are others when I show a full white screen that are black. So the flipping of the mirrors is starting to fail, I guess. And right now it's kind of tolerable, but I bought the television based on 3D capability. Well, as we all know, that the 3D excitement and, it was kind of more of a gimmick. People didn't buy into it. The media content wasn't really there. And so that's now not even
Now it's you got to do immersive virtual reality. You got to go beyond the 3D stuff.
As a matter of fact, I can talk about that. But Facebook.
Realize that this one, it's a matter of time. And 7 years, not that long, actually. It's kind of surprising.
But it's a mechanical device. And so it's my expectation that was going to be like I say, I thought the bulb would wear out. So anyway, it's beautiful, but obviously we now have ultra high definition is the new thing, 4K as they call it.
That's right.
Television.
So is that going to go the way of Blu-ray or what? Blu-ray is catching on. Is Blu-ray 4K? Is that
Blu-ray is no, it's not. In fact, you have to buy a very expensive new player to be able to be projecting, being able to get a 4K DVD system.
Okay. You know, so can you stream it? Like, I'm not sure Netflix would do it.
You know, the whole world, the technology world, you have to look at all the, you know, potential things that are changing. And as you are probably realizing that the media, you know, the physical, what we call red box, or you can, you know, go out and get a CD. There are very few rental stores, and I don't think Netflix is sending, they're probably still sending out CDs, I guess.
Well, DVDs, but yeah, we get DVDs and Blu-ray DVDs.
Right,
yeah.
Right. They're sending those out, and you'd still do it. But their whole model was built on streaming, and that's now, I think, probably the majority of people receive content through on-demand movies or on-demand streaming. And that is limited right now with the fact that the industry is, you know, having a difficult time with the data rates to go to 4K. So,
right. So let's back up here a little bit. So if you have the old DLP screen and it was still working and you had a DVD box set up to it and it would probably look great with a Blu-ray player going.
Yeah, 1080p, right.
So it looks
resolution.
Looks really
good. Looks very beautiful, right.
Right. So you update to a new machine which has a higher capability for resolution, the 4K, which is what, four times the resolution
right.
of 1080p?
Something like that. It's double the 180. So, and they're talking about 4K is going across the screen anyway.
Right. So it's a lot more resolution. And I've heard arguments that it's hard for the human eye to detect that much or that difference. At some point you get up real close to a big screen and you still can't see the pixels. There's not much more room you can go in that direction. But the issue now is as you're mentioning, is there's all these different pieces that fit into it, right? Mm-hmm. So the screen itself, so the DLP is kind of proving that it's not that durable. I had a replaceable lamp. So reliability was kind of considered in that system.
Yeah.
But it was a new play to get a higher resolution at that time, right? So technology's moved on. We got these really beautiful LED screens. You know, back when you bought the DLP, I bought a plasma screen, and it's still running. It's still running. We don't need a heater in the house at all, but we can run that plasma screen and heat up the whole room. Yeah. It works really great.
But plasmas are not being sold very much either now.
No. It's all these LEDs now, which are
right.
It's inherently it's got some advantages and all that stuff. So now let's back up a little bit. One of the main questions about the continuation of this story is, and what did you're a reliability guy. Did you check the halt reports on the new screens before you go down and ask the guys at Costco or Best Buy, what's the test plan on these?
I'm sure they would release them in a minute, you know, sure. Whatever. Yeah. Well, you want to find out what the limit was for when we tested it in halt? No.
You know, at best, they're going to show you an MTBF
side
of the box. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure the specifications are still 35C to, 10C,
10 to 35, don't drop some
use
trucks.
Environment, all that stuff.
Don't get it wet. that'd be interesting. I bet you they haven't changed yet. The technology within has dramatically changed.
Yes.
All right. So back up, though. You walk into the store, you have intent on buying a new screen.
Right.
How important is the reliability of this decision?
Well, it's pretty important. One of the advantages of buying from one of the warehouse stores was they were offering an additional year instead of the 1 year warranty that was offered by the manufacturer. They would tack on another year, and that was an advantage because I kind of, as a reliability engineer, I know the chances of the product failing in a long are really the highest in the first year, and that declines rapidly over time.
And these ultra-definition guys are relatively new. I think they've been out for a couple of years now, but they really cut the cost on these things for this year.
Oh, it's that's the thing. Every year, I'm buying a better TVs, four times more resolution, a lot more features like Bluetooth audio so that I can listen with my Bluetooth headphones. Mm-hmm. I haven't been able to do that before. Brightness, the dynamic range, high definition or high dynamic range, mm-hmm. are all kinds of huge advantages, even though there's not much content out there right now. And that's a challenge. I'm ahead of the technological game, so to speak. But the cost of it is the cheapest television high-definition television I've ever bought. And, you know, it's just been dropping and dropping. And I know you can't even get a 1080p. Well, there are still some standard high-definition televisions you can access. And they're, you know, for the 60-inch, $500 or less now, or mm-hmm. getting around that price point. But they're going to quit manufacturing just because of the volume.
Dropping on them. It doesn't make sense to get it. But
no.
So when for consumer product, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, for $1,000 purchase, I'm expecting say 5 years of good use out of it. Now,
at least
now. So, and you and I have been tracking a lot of this stuff, and we check different websites, mm-hmm. and we look for, you know, what's the complaints or what are issues people having, things like that. And the LEDs seem to be really solid from a reliability point of view. Now, the LED part is fine, right? But yes. There are reports of cracked screens when you take it out of the box. There's shipping damage, right? That's still a problem we got to solve.
No, that's true.
That's a reliability issue.
It is a reliability. You know, somebody drops it off the truck. I mean, or as I was loading into the car, you know, they were warning me, put the screen face up. You know, here's the arrow in the box.
And you got to pay attention.
I'm not going to load anything on top of it, but I could see other customers
not paying attention to it, or hit a really particularly bad bump. So there's all kinds of things. No, but that's just the TV, right? So in the old days, it came with its own antenna, and you kind of, as I remember as a small child, holding the antenna so my dad could get better reception. And he'd say, a little left, a little right, just stand right there. You know, I'm standing there hanging onto the TV antenna. For those younger listeners, that's in the history books now. It used to get TV over the air.
Right.
I think you still can.
And now you do on Wi-Fi. They all have their built-in Wi-Fi in the television. Right. They're actually computers. In fact, they have a quad CPU in them. They can basically surf the internet. The capabilities are so technological capabilities are just increasing tremendously.
But let's say we're adding up it as a reliability of a system, because at the end of the day, after dinner, we want to walk over to the TV and flip mm-hmm. on the game or watch a movie or whatever. But let's say we're going to watch a movie tonight. Right. Last mm-hmm. night, my wife and I watched Love Actually. Great movie. Mm-hmm. It's just a fun time movie. And I didn't even think about all of the connections that actually allowed that to happen. So the TV, the mechanical electrical system of the TV had to come up. The computer fired up. It's connected to an Apple TV, a little box. Mm-hmm. And it's like mm-hmm. Roku, or there's other set-top boxes. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's connected to my Wi-Fi system. So it's going to mm-hmm. a router, which goes to a modem, which goes to, I don't know what's behind the wall on the telecommunication side and on the cable side, right? And it's connected to some server someplace at Netflix where we stream the movie from. So there's hardware and wires and fiber and copper, and it's translated into packets to send over Wi-Fi. All of those boxes have to work.
And they're all made by different people and different companies.
Right.
They have a totally you've got this long chain, and they're, and except for you, there's no connection.
That's right.
As far as between the companies, Apple doesn't talk to the cable company.
There's standards, and it's, you know, we all got to work together for this thing to work.
But yes,
we're taking advantage of all these different technologies. Mm-hmm. And the reliability part, from my point of view, is one is availability. The concern is, does it work tonight when I hit play?
Right.
And then two is the reliability. Can I do this over and over over the purchase of my systems, the parts I buy? So I bought four boxes that are in my house in order to make that happen. It's the TV, the Apple TV set-top box, the modem, and the router. Mm-hmm. And there's bits of connectors and all these other pieces that go into it. And there's sound system and the individual reliability of those things. It's important to me. One.
Oh, sure. I mean, it's track that in stuff. Fact, but Fred, don't you expect it to be? I mean, your anticipation is that when you hit the on switch, it will come on and mm-hmm. all these things will be connected. I mean, how often do you have problems with that system?
It depends on how weird we get with it. I mean, it's like for a while there, we were streaming episodes of like Survivor off of CBS, but I only could pull up CBS on a browser, and my TV didn't have a browser on it. So I was running a browser through the Apple TV, through this, and you know, it's back to the small child hanging onto the antenna kind of setup. You know, I kind of patched it all to get it to work, which now it's a lot simpler. It comes right through. I can get it right straight through the TV now. But when I go buy this stuff, I'm frustrated as a consumer that cares about reliability, because consumer reports and discussion forums and all the other venues to help me understand is this reliable or not are, other than consumer reports and other testing services, are pretty anecdotal. They're not very satisfying. And Consumer Reports does basically surveys of past customers. So it wouldn't help you with this new fangled high definition, high dynamic range, you know, brand new TVs, because there's no history. And the anecdotal stuff is likewise kind of sparse. There's not a lot of discussion on that because it's new. And then when I go to the store and I ask the clerk, you know, the sales guy, you know, how reliable is this? Oh, they're all good. They'll never fail. They want the sale. And if I really press them, we start looking at the side of the box. We look at paperwork and literature and stuff. And the best we ever get is it's, you know, well, it's got a warranty. Well, that's not reliability. That's a mitigation of the risk of failure. It's not telling me how good it is. The difference between a 3-month warranty, a 1-year warranty, and a 2-year warranty is marketing. It's not how reliable it is. And so, you know, what do we do?
I do look at Consumer Reports, and I do look for their, you know, as far as initial quality or initial function, you know, the quality of the picture and things like that. But you're right, they don't have any long history because the product hasn't been out a long time. So especially for the ultra high definition televisions, they really don't have any data on those because they've only been out a year mm-hmm. or two. So I look at the technologies like LED. Now that's been with the new with LED bulbs for our illumination for the rooms and things like that. LED technology has been really focused on by the industry, and the wear out modes I think are becoming pretty well known because, you know, it's now a very common lighting method.
And it's been in automotive lighting even longer.
It's been in automotive and other places, and they've been improving. And I believe the physics of failure, they've been understanding better. And certainly CALS, like the University of Maryland's CALS, is doing symposiums on LED mm-hmm. reliability and prognostics and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I just, you know, with this kind of technology, especially when I look at it as a solid state, as opposed to, you know,
to your mirrored system.
DLP, in my DLP, I had a mercury vapor lamp. Well, that absolutely has a wear out mode. You know, we know about that.
And it doesn't take long, yeah.
And it doesn't take long relative to what maybe LEDs are. And we're talking about with our room light bulbs, they're talking about 20 years. I'm not sure. You know, they really haven't had 20 years.
That's another one. And I went and bought some of these smart bulbs that are LED based. And I was asking, because it's got electronics and a little, you know, Wi-Fi system built in.
Oh, yeah. Right? They now, right.
But I asked the guys, when it says 20 year life, what does that really mean? And he goes, well, it'll last for 20 years. I says, well, how many will last for 20 years? And that kind of completely stumped him.
Exactly.
So here's my question to you, Kirk. We kind of took a long way around to get to this, is why aren't manufacturers, if reliability of purchases for our home entertainment system and other things that we buy, anything we buy, is reliability is a consideration or a factor in that purchase decision. Mm-hmm. Why is there not more information made available from manufacturers who probably do due diligence to make sure it does last for 5 years with some relatively small chance of failure? Why isn't that more publicly available? Why don't companies say, hey, we expect 98% of these to last for 5 years? And here's the evidence that backs that up. For like you or I could go to a website or to the supplier site and get more details on that.
Well,
why don't we see that?
My guess is, Fred, that they would that anything that they put out there in detail could be countered by a competitor.
Put price out there. That's important to consumers. They put feature set out there. That's important to consumers.
Right.
Is reliability not important enough to provide information on it?
No, it's important, but what can they tell you? I mean, they haven't been able to run it. There's only 8,760 hours in a year. Okay. So you can't run it any more than that.
Well, you don't watch TV 24/7, do you?
No, you don't do that. Right. And I'm sure they do.
So in 6 months, I could tell you a year's worth. And, you know, if you're only running 12 hours a day, there's accelerated testing. There's physics of failure evaluation. There's halt testing. There's, you know, variation in manufacturing systems and stuff that all can point to. Here's how we know it's reliable.
Well, we don't know what Samsung or these manufacturers, LG, what their test programs
are. Well, here's the counterpart of this, Kirk. So for consumer electronics, it might be that the consumers haven't demanded it, right? And we use discussion and anecdotal evidence to make our decisions. And if we don't demand it in detail enough times, then there's not a requirement from the customer base to supply it. Consumer Report makes a business out of supplying that information, right? In the way they do. So a few years ago, I was working with a company that was working in the solar power generation field.
Mm-hmm. Right? Photovoltaics, yeah.
And so they were one aspect of this tracking system. And they got a requirement from their banks, the banks that were funding a major project that they were going to be a part of. The banks asked them, how reliable is your system and how do you know? And so that's where I got involved, was helping them create a response to that request of how reliable is their system. And they called it the bankability. We had to be able to prove that our system was reliable enough and the cost of maintenance would be low enough that it was worth funding the development and deployment of that project. And so in the solar industry, and I've seen it in other industries and medical industries and startups and all kinds of other ones, one of the important questions is, well, how reliable is it? And how do you know? Right? And so if it's important when we're making, you know, $100 million in investment, there's some margin there to say, well, we want you to spend $500,000 to prove to us that it's reliable. But when we walk in the store for $1,000 TV set, it's reliable. That's good enough. So did you see my dilemma there?
Well, you're right. But Fred, you know, we've talked, of course, we're getting into reliability prediction and analysis and future. And we have to make a lot of establish a lot of conditions that those things have to, that we are making this basis of our a projection into the future estimate. And that is one of them is, you know, consistent manufacturing. Don't buy the television that was made on a Friday or, you know, as they say,
that's TVs. My dad always talked about don't buy the one made on Friday.
But so those are the things that I say that, yes, based on and in energy systems like you were talking about, that's very important because that's their economic return on investment of a major system. And I think in the complexity of a solar panels and the generation system is conceivably a little bit less complex than an ultra high definition television or something like that. It has multiple computers, has multiple radios in it, and all these things. And you know, it's just like my DLP, Mitsubishi television. I would have expected, and the engineers that designed it expected the reliability being based on the lamp, the mercury vapor lamp. So they made it modular to be replaced. But what I'm actually seeing as a failure mode is the MEMS DLP chip, the mirror chip failing to eventually flip some of these mirrors. So, you know, these are all projections that we have to make assumptions about of the physics of what we think is a dominant and driving mechanism that will cause failure. And you just brought up a good point about the LEDs. When they say it's going to last this long, is it going to fail, just blank, not turn on? Or are we going to have a dimming effect? Because we talked about the dimming of an LED over time.
What is a failure?
Yeah, what is – that's it. You've had a great blog, When Do We Count It as a Failure? Mm-hmm. You know, and my wife doesn't think the DLP television has failed. Yeah, that's fine, you know, but she was watching a fuzzy, you know, CRT when I first met her, you know, that static and the foil on the antenna.
And a 10-year-old boy standing there holding the antenna.
So quality, so that, you know, what's a failure really is also an individual judgment too, not necessarily, you know, when the quality drops of something like a dimming of a light or something like that.
So let's wrap it up here. I don't think we're going to answer the question, but I think at some point reliability is important enough that we communicate, you know, so the products we're working on that will communicate reliability in enough detail so that the buyer can make an assessment of that, judge the reliability performance along with all the other considerations. But our experience, though, with your purchase of a new TV set is that at some point, the reliability is not considered important enough to communicate clearly what it is. And I agree with you. There's all kinds of complexity, and there's probably a lawyer somewhere in there saying, don't tell them it's going to last because if it doesn't, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, but I don't expect companies to give us the full test reports and a consumer product. But I question is how important is reliability when we're pretty much blocked from getting meaningful information about how reliable it should be or it is going to be. And so I question that part. So let's open it up to our listeners and just say, hey, you know, well, one, maybe, you know, Kirk, maybe we're missing a source of information that talks about consumer and household type products and the reliability performance of them. I don't think so. But on the other side is, well, at what level are your customers asking for reliability details, right? There's different markets, different businesses and all this stuff, and I'm sure there's different price points where reliability becomes a requirement that is more than just, oh, trust us, Consumer Report says it's good, right? So it's, where's that threshold? Where do we have to report much more detail about our product's reliability performance?
And so I think that's really where, like a Samsung phone, where there's danger of injury.
Well, now they're telling you this stuff. Yeah. Now they're telling you this stuff. They didn't do it before.
Well, that's because they didn't know. They weren't expecting that to happen.
Oh, okay. Well, that's probably a topic for another whole discussion. So, well, let's wrap this one up, Kirk. Thanks a lot.
Great, Fred. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. we invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.